Now, this is side two of broadcast number 600. This is June the 6th, 1983. There's so much news this week. I put all the main articles out, bought another box of 100 folders, and filled them in one afternoon. But I do want to get into the drug connections, because the very important thing that is breaking in the news now and in so many articles are the links of the United States government, the Central Intelligence Agency, and the mafia, the big cocaine, heroin, drug leaders, and the religious leaders of, say, Israel and the Vatican and the United States, the religious leaders in this narcotics traffic, this three-way bind that they've gotten themselves into. And I want to share some articles on Lebanon. Also, there are two major articles that came out just in the past few weeks on the Nugan Bang in Australia. If I have time, I'll go into this evening again. One is from the Miami Herald, the failed bank linked to the CIA, May the 8th, 1983. And it goes into how the FBI, the CIA, the United States State Department, and the Justice Department are right linked into this terrible scandal, including those top, it says, who's who of the armed services and intelligence. U.S. General Leroy Manner, retired Chief of Staff of the U.S. Forces in Asia and Pacific, helped run the Nugan Hands Philippine office, while Rear Admiral Earl Buddy Yates was the bank's first president. Now, remember, Nugan Hand broke, and I had it on the air a couple of years ago. I've talked about Wilson, Edwin Wilson, and Frank Turple and Nugan Hand years before the establishment media would recognize the problem, and then Wall Street Journal came in just a year ago with stories. But this one story from Miami tells you about these military General Edwin Black, former Assistant Army Chief of Staff of the Pacific, ran Nugan Hand's Hawaii office. And these names aren't new to you, but for new listeners, it's very important to know there's a General Earl Koch, C-O-C-K-E Jr., who allowed the Nugan Hand Bank to use his Washington offices as a consultant. Now, when this gets into the Miami Herald, which is somewhat of a military area too, military bases, and it tells about narcotics, cocaine, drug trafficking, murder, the failed bank, the collapse, the missing money, the illegal arms, and how William Colby of the CIA was involved. $50 million is missing from a Bahamas bank. I wonder, from Singapore alone, $50 million is missing from Singapore alone. And then in the Philippines, there's another $3 million missing. And it goes into the Bahama banks and the secrecy. And, of course, you know, the big problem with the Vatican has to do with the Bahama banks and where that money goes. So the recycling, this was $50 million to $1 billion. This is the military, the generals, the admirals, the CIA, heroin, cocaine, murder, drugs, arms, and so forth. And then they link to Aldo Moro's murder and the politics of Italy and the murder of Allende down in Chile. There's another story, land of killers, pushers, pimps, and corruption in high places. This is London Times. And they're trying to say that Australia is a mess of corruption, that there are 10 committees investigating. Organized crime is unchecked and out of control. It tells about the $2,219 million alone turnover in organized crime in Australia. Now, the CIA began to bring that in. And they blame the Australians for this when the CIA military in Southeast Asia began their problem. They talk about an heiress, Juanita Nielsen, who was murdered. There are bodies here they describe, and I'll do a little more on that later. And another story from the London Observer, United Kingdom's agents staged third world plots. And it's about the Nugan Hand Bank, the secrecy, the takeover of governments, and the use of coups and murders and drugs and so forth. So that is surfacing at this time. Now, getting back to Lebanon, because this ties in to the Vatican connections, to the South American connections, the Australian connections, and Washington, and Ronald Reagan, and Paul Laxalt, and Richard Nixon with his narcotic connections. This story this week, report, Begin planned Beirut invasion. Many of you heard that story. You remember a year ago that I said that this whole setup was done, killing the ambassador in London, the Israeli ambassador, Mr. Shlomo Argov, as the excuse to make an invasion that they planned before. And this article is about Alexander Haig saying to Israel, go ahead and cling out the PLO. Someone has to do it. You do it. Mr. Clark didn't want it done, according to this story. At least he bows out of it. Casper Weinberger didn't want it, according to this story. But what happens is Haig says, go ahead and do it. Well, does Alexander Haig run the foreign policy with Israel? Of course he does. He just says, go on and do it. Cling him out. That's what the article says. It says, Jamal can't do it because there's an election coming up. So you do it. You get rid of him. Attack the Muslim population in the Western sector. And the Christians needed the Israeli soldiers. And so Haig told, you know, Begin, go on in and do it. Jamal won the election, but he was killed September 14th, the same day that Grace Kelly was killed. And the Israeli militias go in and look the other way, don't report the murders. And one of the top people responsible for this entire bloodbath is going to be promoted again in the military. They want him promoted. There's a controversy in Israel this week. Well, a year ago, I was talking about the dope partnership of Sharon and Jamal, the setup of the fascist Lebanese regime. And this article goes on, the one in the New York Post, Daily News, rather, tells about the fascism of the Falange and how the father set up the system of government similar to the Nazi and fascist governments in the 30s. And Israel is helping these people. Now, you have to say, well, who is running the show in any of these countries? The Jamals are part of the set up the Falange, violently anti-Semitic, fascist, notorious dope dealers. The United States doesn't want to deal with them. They want to share the profits. Israel is a part of it. Israel walks in and does the clinging out for Jamal, and Haig is telling Begin what to do. I still say over and over again that Alexander Haig and Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer are a law to themselves above anybody else. If Clark and Weinberger don't want it, Haig just says, go ahead and do it. And according to this story, this is why Alexander Haig was fired, because he went over the heads of the other people. But they had planned it for a long time. I knew they had planned it. I knew that that Israeli ambassador was the Reichstag. As a matter of fact, I used that on the broadcast a year ago in August and said that this was Sharon's Reichstag, that he set up the murder of this poor Israeli ambassador to London, Mr. Argo, as excuse to go in. And I spoke about the dope dealing a year ago, it was in August, about the narcotics of the family. And this article from New York Daily News goes at great length into the narcotics traffic, Lebanon export of hashish worldwide, major U.S. cities, particularly New York and Detroit. This is what we really need, right? And they want to get the Syrians out. They don't want them there because the Falange wants to take over the hashish business in the Bekaa Valley. This is their franchise. And the PLO want to sell heroin. They can buy a few guns, too. I just read this morning that Gaddafi has the atomic bomb. And last week, another atomic bomb was found in Italy and was confiscated. I wonder how many are around. This article from the Daily News goes into the origin of that family, the Jamals, and how they're stuck because the Middle East was interrupted when Afghanistan was invaded by the Soviet Union. And one of the things that made Jimmy Carter so mad, and he didn't want to go to the Olympic Games, was that it interrupted the Georgia connection to the narcotics passing through Afghanistan. And according to the Daily News, the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, said that they still have alternate ways of getting drugs out while this Lebanese war is going on, and they go through Afghanistan and Pakistan. It's business as usual. So this huge hashish trade is known to the United States officials. Congressman Lester Wolf says the United States will do nothing about it. Jamal is our friend, fascist, and blindly just kills, you know, the PLO or anybody in his way. And the drugs go on into our country where the prison population is immense. The robberies, the murders for drugs is tremendous. We're paying the pains for all of the narcotics that opened up, flooded in from the time Richard Nixon was president. And of course, Ronald Reagan and his connections to the dope syndicate are so tremendous, and the drugs are pouring in from everywhere. Now, I have a story here that Jonathan Marshall got and David Emery sent to me from the Italian newspaper, the Corriere della Sera, at the time of the arrest, you know, the big drug arrest in Milan that connected the Banco Ambrosiano and to the Vatican and to worldwide drug traffic all over the world. That took place this fall. And in December, there was an article in Italy, which has been translated. It said the police seized a shipment of arms of Colt rifles. We talked about Bell helicopters near Milan. This huge group estimated to be one of the largest drug gun running centers in the entire world. On Monday morning, the police arrested a Turk, Mr. Sewka, 37, for drug trafficking, and he was arrested in Athens also, was the Syrian Mohar al-Din, D-I-N. On August the 5th, 1973, that goes back to 2 years after Claus Barbie started working as a regular CIA informant and had his hands on reorganizing all the drug traffic of Bolivia and Peru. And this is a year before, right before Richard Nixon is out, and Watergate is just at a peak of scandal here. But on August the 5th, 1973, just to set the time sequence, an agent of the Drug Enforcement Agency, and remember the Drug Enforcement Agency at the time of Watergate was E. Howard Hunt and G. Gordon Liddy with Operation Intercept. You can imagine that Drug Enforcement Agency, you know what that was. On August the 5th, 1973, an agent of the Drug Enforcement Agency and a special Turkish agent made contact with Arsan. Arsan is the office in Milan in the building of Banco Ambrosiano, the bank building where Roberta Calvi was in the headquarters of the Milan Mafia. The American was Thomas Angioletti, A-N-G-I-O-L-E-T-T-I, Italian spelling name but American. The documents from the Italian Interior Ministry say, in quotes, from the moment Arsan collaborated with our offices in Rome, from that moment in 1973, Arsan, the largest gun-running narcotics center in Italy, out of Milan, they started working with the drug enforcement agencies of the United States in Rome and Milan. From that moment, Arsan collaborated with our offices, from which they obtained permits with the help of the agent to get morphine base and ship it, and Arsan played a double game, going from a liquor and cigarette smuggler to big-time heroin dealer. Remember, Aristotle Onassis began with cigarettes and liquor, and Joe Kennedy with liquor. Then it went into the bigger operation. But Arsan, that office, was working with the United States Drug Enforcement Agency from 1973 on. So the story of the entanglement of heroin in the United States and Nazis and the use of it for the profits of continuing the fascist regimes all over the world has been done by our government, by the Central Intelligence Agency, and continues today. And it seems that there's no way to stop it. When a simple matter, like say the government changes hands in Bolivia, we offer them money to stop shipping. As I said, the Houston Post had that story this last week, May the 15th, 1983, several weeks ago, that the United States government made an offer. Stop growing cocaine there. We'll give you $75 million if you'll plant cocoa instead, or crops, instead of the cocaine that's coming in the United States. Well, now Mr. Gomez has been arrested, and Claus Barbie has been arrested, and the government says, no, we won't do that. You can take $20 million and turn it to $60 million like John DeLorean. Why can't we? Why would they take $75 million when they could make $100, $200, I don't know how many times over, millions of dollars? So Bolivia said, no, they're not going to substitute. The Reagan administration wants to substitute. Well, what will the administration do for their narcotics? One of the most treacherous things to watch that's way underplayed and not discussed enough by various researchers in the bulletin is the Japanese and the Chinese mafia from Hong Kong coming into this country. I heard stories that Reverend Moon had infiltrated those mass weddings at Madison Square Garden. Part of that was to bring in this huge narcotics traffic into the United States, these marriages where they don't have sex until he tells them, or if at all, and they marry somebody who they never knew, who comes over here, and then they get automatic citizenship. One half of the partnership is American. And I understand that this is a big conduit for not only the far right wing, but for the drug connections and families coming into the United States. It's really dangerous, and it's worth watching, but it's hard to remember those names, you know that. Anyway, the arrests in Milan were important because for the Pope Montini, who worked with John Paul II before he was a pope, who was excommunicated to Milan, then went on to Rome and referred to in the book, the Final Conclave, as the Milan Mafia. So at this time, they are shipping over to the Middle East. The Middle East is getting cocaine from Bolivia and South America. And what you have here is a group of people whose nerves, raw nerves, are being exposed now in various newspaper articles. And the common denominator, the one common denominator, is the Central Intelligence Agency and the United States Drug Enforcement Agency that work with the Klaus Barbies and the Jamiles and Arson and the Banco Ambrosiano and Paul Marcinkus, who's hiding in the Vatican, the common denominator. One of the fellows that I mentioned was going to be promoted, Brigadier General Amos Yaron. Begin wants him, he insists that he get a promotion. He was the general that was criticized for the massacre, who stood aside, who didn't report the deaths. And Begin wants the government overruled and let him be promoted now to be head of the military and military intelligence in Israel. That's just what they need. He knew about the killings and went behind, allowed the troops, told the Lebanese, come on in, massacre them. And, of course, Haig told them to do it, and they all had agreed in advance. Now, just changing the subject 1 minute from the drug and narcotic traffic, because I think it's interesting and important. There's so many people, important people that die of various accidents and diseases. The man who isolated cancer virus died this week at age 84. In Belgium, Albert Claude, 84 years old, received the Nobel Prize for Medicine in 1974 for his cancer research, in which he isolated the first cancer virus in 1973. That was the Jack Ruby virus or the Martha Mitchell virus, okay? His research helped create the science of cell biology. He was known in the United States for his cell structures. And in 1944, this is 10 years later, he succeeded in using an electronic microscope to make the first pictures of cancer virus, and they were isolated. And he's had those pictures since 1944. He worked on the cancer virus. Mr. Claude won several awards, including the U.S. National Science Foundation Prize in 1966, a prize from Columbia University in 1970. Of course, the doctor, Columbia, was one of those that assisted in lying on the autopsy of John Kennedy. Some of you remember that. He also got the Paul Ehrlich Prize of Frankfurt University in 1971. He worked in Germany and Belgium. He never went to high school, but he did his own work, worked for the Defense Department in Europe, World War I. The defense minister gave him a citation. Then he worked for British intelligence, and he worked for the Kaisers in Germany, the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute in Germany, for cancer research in Berlin, and then for 18 years, the Rockefeller Institute in New York, for which he became a member. Remember about a year ago, I talked about the fellow at the Rockefeller Institute, the graduate from Harvard who was in Puerto Rico doing experiments on cancer. Now, cancer is a political disease, just as AIDS is, or sickle cell anemia, or the Tay-Sachs. You have AIDS and the Legionnaires and the swine flu, I believe. These are all part and parcel of experimentations going on at the present time. I got a letter from somebody today when I came to the station about AIDS, and we'll do more about it later. Now, a woman who wanted to come visit me last December, I turned her down. I didn't like her. I didn't like the tone of her letter, and I didn't really want to see her, and I don't see those kinds of people or let them in the house. She lives in Alaska, and her father's a big official at NBC or ABC Broadcasting in Los Angeles. She wrote me a letter this week, or last week, but I didn't announce it on the air yet. She wanted me to tell you about the Jimmy Swaggart Christian Crusade that was in Oakland last week. Swaggart's name was in the newspaper with the top evangelist. He made $44 million. They broke it down into the various churches, and Swaggart was $44 million. Jim Baker's Bacher's Heritage Village is $53 million, so he's kind of small for $44 million. But Jim Swaggart, she wanted me to announce the crusade in Oakland that they had this last week and announced it on the air. And she told me that I should change my ways and announce this because, she said, you know, May, in the business you're in, this is her letter, she says, I understand you're cynical about her religious, organized religion and so forth. She said, you can develop cancer quite easily in your field without the strength and blood of Jesus in my field. Therefore, will you please announce on your program that Jimmy Swaggart of the Christian Crusade will be in Oakland June 3rd, 4th, and 5th. And then I got a letter, not with a threat or suggestion like that, but similar, from India this week. I thought, my goodness, World Watchers is, that's why I call it World Watchers. I'm watching them, but they're watching me. So from Alaska, I get a letter that you could develop cancer quite easily in your field. And then I got a letter from India about Jesus, all the way from India, along those lines. Jack Anderson mentioned in regard to the Seymour Hersh book, oh, I'm going to be doing a lot more on that next week, the book on Henry Kissinger and Seymour Hersh. I didn't forget about it. It's very important. But Jack Anderson mentioned how when G. Gordon Liddy and E. Howard Hunt of Operation Intercept and the Drug Enforcement Agency and so forth wanted to get at Jack Anderson for the articles he was writing at the time of Watergate, they went to the CIA physician and discussed various techniques for drugging Anderson. Remember, they were going to put something on the steering wheel of his car, and they also had toothpaste poisons that you could use, and I suggest that this could possibly be what used on J. Edgar Hoover in May of 72. They went to the CIA doctor on suggestions on what to do to a person that they didn't like. So I thought this was interesting. He brought that out this week. Many of you knew it. Some of you didn't know it. Another point about medical, as long as we're talking about this subject, and then I'll wind up with some more on the Nugan hand. Hearts to Go from Africa, Newsweek, May 30th. What do you think of this? South African Hearts to Go. Dr. Christian Barnyard, who performed the world's first heart transplant, is now exporting transplantable hearts from South Africa to Italy. Wow. How do you feel about that one? He's to Udine, Italy, and they can acquire South African hearts for transplant operations. You like that one? Whose hearts do you think they'll be? Huh? You want to bet? Okay. And once the preservation problem is over, Barnard hopes to ship 5 hearts a year to Italy. Oh, boy. That's pretty gross. It's called South African Hearts to Go. The medical business is an important industry. That's what the Howard Hughes memo said. Keep the Hughes Medical Institute going. It's the fourth largest industry in the United States, or it will become. And if we have a problem with not enough money in the government and a huge deficit, Ronald Reagan asked this last week, May 24th, for $48 million more for new nerve gas. You know how much there is around? There's enough to destroy the world. How many times over? And there's not any money, and there's a huge deficit. He's going to cut the taxes, slash those. He's going to ask more for defense. The one thing we really need is new chemical weapons. Did you read the story about the bee feces over in Southeast Asia that they think it isn't Russian gas or chemicals, but the bees were crapping on the leaves that they tested? They found 3 leaves and said it's Russian gas. And now there's a story that the bees were doing it and not the Russians. There's a big conflict going on. Which one is doing it, the Russian, the entire Soviet Union, or some bees down there? How can you take 2 leaves? After all the defoliation that the United States did in Dow Chemical and the Agent Orange and what went to Southeast Asia, how would we have the nerve to say, here's 2 leaves to prove that this is what they're doing? So if you like this one, $48 million for new nerve gas, he just asked the Armed Services Committee for this. And the funny part is he gets everything he wants. Let's see if he gets that one, okay? Now, just to wind this up tonight, because I have talked about the Nugan Hand story, this article in the Miami Herald is important because every paper treats it like it's a news story, but at least it's new to them. And what this article is saying in the Miami Herald is that why won't the FBI release 119 pages of information compiled on Nugan Hand Bank, a bank that was American money in Australia, military money? It said the CIA has close ties to the bank. The bank is expected to dominate a current Royal Commission investigation into Nugan Hand activities. Now, this is the 5th major inquiry, it says, into the bank operation, and they have 10 other investigations going. Can you imagine? Down in Canada, to unwind the people such as Bernie Houghton, who's over in Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia is involved in a $22 billion scam of taking money from Italy down to Licio Gelli, the head Nazi from Italy down in Argentina. Incidentally, Gelli's still in that prison in Switzerland. You never hear a word about him. He's been in there ever since Jamal. The night that Jamal was killed and Grace Kelly was killed, he was taken to a jail in Switzerland. He was checking out like $30 or $40 million that night. Haven't heard a word about him. And Edwin Wilson's pretty quiet, too. Murder Incorporated, He's pretty quiet now that his friend Duberstein was murdered and Kevin McCullough. You don't hear a thing about Edwin Wilson. All of them tied, Vatican Bank, Edwin Wilson, all of them tied to Nugenhan Bank. The fifth major inquiry into the operation. However, the questions about the possible links between this bank and the United States FBI and the CIA and the State Department and the Justice, as I told you before, are never far from the surface. How can our Justice Department rationalize being in this kind of operation? It goes into the background. The bank was founded in 1974 by Charles Nugent of the Green Berets and became a CIA operation. When the Australians requested information about the bank from the FBI, they only could see 70 pages, 189-page file. Some of it's been destroyed, and they're holding it back. They'll only let their government see 70 pages. Investigators who say they have never seen the FBI file suspect that they have turned it over to the Australian Security Intelligence Organization, but they describe it as a bizarre case, more bizarre than John le Carré's plot. And as I said before, John Kennedy Jr. studying history is as bizarre as Shakespeare or Greek tragedy. They said Nugenhan was leaving the country. Of course, Frank Nugent was murdered, and Mr. Hand hasn't been located. There's a rumor that he's down in Africa. They gave an alias of him, and it tells, as I say, about the military people and the money all over the different banks around the world. And the links to Bob Wilson, Representative Bob Wilson of California, was tied to William Colby. Now, Colby was instrumental with counterintelligence in 1974 in the SLA, the kidnapping of Patty Hearst, and this when this bank began to fund the CIA covert operations around the world in Italy and in the United States. And the London Observer story, as I say, the land of killers, pushers, pimps, and corruption in high places. And it tells about various officials. It says it's touched the highest offices. The New South Wales Premier, the new one, Neville Wran, W-R-A-N, stood down voluntarily last week while his own Attorney General appointed a commission to investigate allegations that he tried to influence court cases, that he misappropriated over $54,000 from the Sydney, Australia, the largest football club. Then another top government official has been soliciting and running a call girl racket. That's like the Bobby Baker, Lyndon Johnson, J. Edgar Hoover. What's new down in Australia? We had it here. If we cleaned it out here, they wouldn't have had it in Australia. It goes into, as I say, the intelligence links, the effects into Indonesia, New Guinea, and various countries. And, of course, it goes to South America, to Chile, Argentina, Bolivia, Klaus Barbie, Walter Ralph, and, as I say, Murder Incorporated. Now, I'm going to go back next week to the L.A. police files and Larry McDonald and the scandal of the Birch Society, because that, with Roy Cohn, his partner, is the drug connection. And I'll have to do some charts for you, like I did that Vatican chart that time of the various networks. It was done in jest, but it was serious, the names. I'll have to outline these names for you, and then you can send for the sheet, because I admit it's complicated, and they interweave and appear and reappear certain names through this entire script. The important thing is that they are appearing, that there are articles in New York and in Miami and London, Australia, and, as I say, even Wall Street Journal and New York Times. Parts of the puzzle of the fascist, drug-dealing, church-related activity with the Central Intelligence Agency are surfacing every day. I have a pile more to share with you, and we'll get to them, but our time is up now. This is Mae Brussel, and this is KAZU-FM, and I'll be back with you next week in Pacific Grove, California.
The views expressed by Mae Brussel during World Watchers are those of the commentator and do not reflect the opinions of KAZU, its board of directors, or staff.